Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 127 of the Alexis L podcast. The Fiat 127, that was a car when I was, just after I'd left college and was, you know, doing odd jobs and a bit of teaching. That was one of the cars that middle class people, you know, you call middle class people, I suppose, college lecturers and so on and so forth. That was one of the cars that they would buy along with the Citroën de Chavaux, you know, to signal to the rest of the world that they were, they had, you know, they followed a kind of continental aesthetic. It was also
nice little boxy thing.
Yeah, it was boxy. It was a hatchback, you know, which British Leyland never really got around to making until much, much, much too late. And I think the first one was the Maxi, which was just insane. But so, yeah, I think it was styled by, was it styled by Bertone? Bertone?
Styled by?
Yeah. They don't just appear cars. Somebody has to design them, you know.
Uh-huh. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I really like it. Oh, my God. I've seen them around, obviously. See, Pio Manzu, Italian designer.
All right.
Pio Manzu.
I don't know who that
designed
was.
It.
All right. But, you know, it's a...
Sorry, yeah. Live fact check you. How do you feel about that? Some people get annoyed that I'm Googling while you talk.
Do they? I don't see. Well, that's...
Well, one person did. They said, well, just be in the moment. Can't you just stop and just be in the moment?
So it's just important, you know, so we should be accurate, I think.
Yeah, well, every mistake you make gets us 10 times more comments. So.
Oh, does it? All right. Okay.
No, not to put you on edge. Make mistakes. You know, whatever. We're not experts on anything.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Fiat 127. I think that formed the basis of later the, you know, the Lada, the Russian Lada, it was exported around the world, that basic shape, really. More the saloon, the 124. The saloon, which became the Lada, was made in a factory in Togliatti. Grad, which was the city to make, named after the leader of the Italian Communist Party.
The modern Fiat 127 couldn't look more different, really.
They still make a 127. So, Fiat cars are sort of being pushed out of the way, haven't they, by Japanese and Korean and now Chinese.
Oh, really?
Manufacturers. Very few people are. Well, Fiat is part of the Stellantis group, isn't
it? Exactly, yeah.
Which includes a number of brands, Chrysler,
Vauxhall,
Jeep, Vauxhall, Opel.
Yeah.
So there's all that going on.
Will you ever buy an electric car?
I mean, I'm not inclined to, really. I think it's all kind of performative, isn't it, all that electric car shit, really. I mean, I've got a car which is, what, now 2011, so it's 15 years old. I mean, and, it, you know, it's a big old diesel. I don't use it very much, but I think it would just be – you know, it's been made, you know, the ecological damage has been done in its manufacture, really. So I'm inclined to hang on to it, and it's, you know, I'm very fond of it as well. So that, you know, I think all this, I mean, a lot of this electric car stuff is, you know, is just a way to keep on consuming without actually addressing the real problems of that capitalism, monopoly capitalism, causes the environment. And they're very heavy, aren't they? So they really dig up the roads more, and they also leave a lot more rubber particles and stuff.
Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The tires really wear out, I think, much more rapidly. I mean, so, you know, Chinese are addressing these problems of weight and stuff. I think they're working on solid state battery, whatever that is. But nevertheless, no, at the moment, it's all just.
Have you ever leased a car?
No, I always of course, when I was a motoring cost once, I used to get a different car every week. So
that was like on loan, though. Yeah.
Loan. Yeah. I've always. The cars I've owned myself, I've always just bought. I mean, often Yeah, just, I mean, a couple I actually bought from Citroën Direct, the two C6s that I've had. No, I've never leased a car.
Yeah. This,
some people say it's a good idea.
What is it? But it's so expensive. It's not cheap.
Well, yeah, I don't.
It's hundreds of quid a month.
Yeah.
So you've got to be of a certain bracket to be able to afford to do that, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
I just
buy enough. Some people like it and they get a new car every 2 years or something.
And then what happens to the old one? Someone else leases it? Or
I guess, yeah, or they sell it.
They sell it secondhand.
Secondhand,
okay.
Market, yeah.
Okay. And it's a way to just make sure you always have the latest model, isn't it?
I think so. I think maybe other advantages is people want to email or text or whatever in.
Yes, listeners at home, do you lease? Let us know why, what the benefits are. We'd love to hear from you. Text in at 84110. Calls text costs your standard network rate plus £1 per text message.
Is that really our text?
No. That would be great. But no, we've got emails, alexisellpodcast@gmail.com. You can message us on our Patreon, patreon.com/alexisellpodcast. Of course,
yeah.
You can contact us on Instagram at alexisellpod.
Did you all have something you wanted?
Me.
Oh, well, sorry, go on.
All goes through me, of course. Something I want to talk about. I don't know. Something pissed me off this week. I'm so fat and old and ugly that whenever I'm at a nightclub with my girlfriend, she always gets concerned citizens pulling her aside and asking if she's okay and if she needs any help. We're just dancing on the, we're just innocently dancing on the dance floor. And now I've just, I don't even know, I can't hear them because she's like whispering in my girlfriend's ear, but now I just know what they're fucking saying. It's happened that often. And it's really starting to wind me
the fuck up. She doesn't accidentally make that sign from the Hunger Games he's supposed to make, or...
No, she doesn't. She always turns around and goes, she's bewildered every time. And she goes, no, I love him. And they're like, okay. And then they'll come back later and they'll be like, are you sure you're okay? Like, honestly, they'll follow up with her. And then she'll go, he's my long-term boyfriend of 7 years. We live together.
Your ages aren't that different, are they, either, really?
It makes me wonder, are we that different, or is it a bit of racism in there? I don't know. Or do I just look like Shrek and she looks like fucking a ginger Princess Diana? I don't know. She's way above my league. You know, I won't say she's not, but fucking hell, man. And it's hurtful. It really ruined my night last time. I'm like, I'm here trying to have a nice time.
Yeah.
People assume I'm some fucking lecherous creep on the dance floor.
And a difference in your ages, is there? With?
I've seen bigger differences. It's not that great a difference. Yeah. No. But she looks younger than she is.
That's true, she does, yeah.
And so, it's it's hurtful. I understand the need. Like, you know, I've seen people be... creeped on the dance floor, and you know, I've had to step in here and there, but
if you're dancing happily together, it's not like you're
exactly, I'm not creeping on her, and she's like giving me the same attention I'm giving her, so people are just looking at our faces and instantly making a judgment call.
Uh-oh.
People need to stop fucking doing that. I think there is it's always white girls who do it. So I think there might be an element of race and racism in there, but I see racism everywhere, you know, maybe I'm too sensitive, but.
Well,
leave us alone.
Is she to lull out with his girlfriend? Don't approach him, whatever you do. Just call the police.
Just go straight to the, right, I'll deal with the police. Because, you know, they have much preferable treatment for brown people than white people.
Of course,
as we have
Nigel Farage, they do,
I think we have to touch on Southampton a bit. It's such a sad story. And
it is,
politicized so blatantly, in such an ugly way.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to think what my response was. Just, I mean, on one level, as a Marxist, the police are. I mean, the police are. You know, I see the police. The police are not there to do what you, you know, think they're there to do. They're essentially an army of occupation, and their role is to protect capital and to protect the establishment. We see that very clearly with their treatment, particularly. I mean, I was shocked by Mark Rowley, the chief of the Met, because I assumed he was incompetent. You know, I assumed he was a useless, jumped up bureaucrat. But when he said, and I'm a patron of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, he said that they deliberately try and route the marches.
Oh, past synagogues.
Past synagogues. Stuff. I was shocked because that's an outright and obvious lie. And I thought he was at least kind of honest. Yeah, but that was an outright lie. And I found that truly shocking.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he knows that that's a lie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He can't be. There's no benefit of the doubt for him there, because every protest, that's a big point of contention. And that's in the organizing of every protest, that's an issue and that's brought up. And
we don't go past any fucking synagogues. I mean, the one that was famous, they wanted to start outside the BBC.
Yeah,
and they said that it was going past the synagogue. And somebody did like a video of where that synagogue was, and it's like 5 minutes away down a side street.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's nowhere near it was nowhere near the route of the demonstration. I did quite a bit on Sandwich Bar about the police. You know, that got a big laugh. It was a remark made by Robert Mark, the former chief of the Met. He said, what was it? Something like his ambition was, his aim was to have less, I can't get it right now, but less criminals inside the Met than outside. the commissioner actually said that, and notoriously in the 60s the Metropolitan Police were notoriously bad. There's that's who the police are, that is who they attract, I think, by and large. On the other hand, I've seen great examples of kindness and decency. We expect the police, I always think, in a way, to pick up the traitors of society. And I've seen examples of great kindness, I think, from the police, they also face, they see humanity at their worst every day. I remember seeing a really brilliant
play. It's almost like there's an element of nuance there, in a way.
In what I'm saying?
The issue of the police.
I've got
just black and white.
I remember seeing a brilliant play. They used to play this place called the Almost Free Theatre on just off Tottenham Court Road. And I remember seeing a play called Christian Love by one of those playwrights who was big in the 60s. I can't remember which one. But it was sort of about the terrible things that the police have to see, the world they live in. I mean, they inhabit a world where they see so much darkness, I think. I don't know. We ask too much of them, I think, in some ways.
Yeah.
It's just not to say that the average person drawn to the police is authoritarian and, But, I mean, I think the police should be constituted in a different way. Not this army of occupation. I remember a slightly remark that I was cycling along quite a few years ago, and a taxi driver just turned left in front of me, without warning, knocked me off the bike, and he was very aggressive. Because he thought I was going to make an insurance claim, and I was quite scruffy. They didn't. The police's attitude to me reminded me in a funny sort of way. The victim reminded me a bit of the way they treated Henry Novak. But I mean, it's despicable that the Farage and the right wing Tommy Robinson, Stephen Yaxley Lennon, trying to to make a completely fallacious point about policing in this country, really. It's a new low in some ways. It's grotesque, really.
So yeah, you can't. It's so tragic what happened to Henry Novak. It's horrible, and you see his dad's statement.
Yeah,
and you can't imagine what a parent is going through. And it's similar to what happened with those poor girls at the Taylor Swift dance class. But the dad actually made a statement and specifically asked people not to use this for more division and that.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
And then you cut to, you see people walking down a very residential street being violent at the police. How many arrests were made?
I don't know.
Compared to a Palestine march.
Yeah.
Compared to a fucking Palestine action sit-in.
Yeah.
Where old biddies are being arrested, you know.
I think we have to question your language there, comrade.
Oh, well, I'm using that as a as a flavorful language to highlight the innocence of those being arrested.
I have to get Robin Ensign to do your job.
Two arrests after 11 officers were injured in the Novak protests. Two arrests.
I mean, probably they'll.
That's,
I mean,
probably what?
They'll go right through the camera footage and scoop them all up later, I would think, but.
That's what happened what they in tend to do last this. Time, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they tend to do.
But still.
Fairness, but yeah.
That's fair. But at the, how many arrests are made in the moment at Palestine protests, you know, of people who are not being violent, who are not standing face to face with the cop and doing a Nazi salute.
Yeah.
And I saw a video of they set a wheelie bin on fire and chucked and pushed it at the coppers. One of those big dumpsters, and shoved it at the coppers, and it just went flying into them. Two arrests. So,
yeah, I mean, if there are only two arrests, that'd be shocking. I assume they will scoop them all up later. I went to see a really good film at the Genesis Cinema on Sunday, Operation Recomply, about Palestine action and the kids. Those who are still serving outrageously long sentences. Well, not sentences. They're just held on remand for no good reason. Up to 2 years before their case comes to court. Some are being released, but it makes it very clear that's why the government wants to do away with jury trials is because people let them off because they see they're acting for their conscience. They're also, in the latest trial of the Filton Six, was it? The judge refused to let them state why they were doing it, refused to let their lawyers state why they were doing it. And still, I think the jury only committed the lesser charge. But then, of course, there's a plan, I think, to charge, even though they were convicted and of criminal damage, there's a plan to charge them as if they were committing terror offences, which is another terrifying step down the road towards authoritarianism. Anyway, Operation Recomply, if you can, I think it's called, if you can find out where it's on, have a screening. It was very nice. Very moving, you know, the decency of these kids is
it's
extraordinary, and the indecency of the British state and Elbit systems and all those other monsters is, clear to see.
It has a official website, operationrecomply.uk. And you can click on the screenings button and see everywhere they're planning on screening it. Oh, they're going to play it at Boomtown Festival.
No, I'll be in the
Glasgow, Manchester, London, Liverpool, Manchester, Leicester as well. And last night I went to see a play or a collection of short plays called Tomorrow Will Be a Palestinian Day in Theatre 503 in Battersea. I suppose this will come out on Saturday, which is the last day of the run. But It was incredibly moving. It's 9 short plays written by Palestinians in Palestine, be they in Gaza, the West Bank, in 1948 Palestine, and one of the plays is written by someone who's currently in prison, a poet. And it's just like, it just destroyed me, man. It's a tough watch, but it's important.
Yeah.
It's important. And even the first play is written by children, and it's about Santa visiting Gaza.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's like very funny and upbeat.
Yeah.
But the subject matter and the context, the kind of the setting of it, and the fact that a child has to look at the world this way, it was just, that was one of the most heartbreaking ones, even though it was filled with jokes and stuff.
Right. Right. Yes, I used to judge this drama competition every year for kids in Gaza, and it haunts me that a lot of those kids will be dead now. It's an awful idea. Yep. It was also today, when we're recording this, that the Britain's independent advisor on anti-Semitism, Lord Mann, John Mann, has released a report about anti-Semitism in the National Health Service. So saying that, Jews are frightened to seek treatment and, badges, and I guess social media content is going to be monitored. John Mann, I was thinking before, it's like nature gives you all the warning signs, like the rattle of the rattlesnake or the bright red of the poisonous berries. John Mann looks like what he is, which is a pig-faced fucking bully. Somebody who was very prominent in the Corbyn anti-Semitism smear lies, and somebody whose job is to find anti-Semitism. He's not going to say it's gone away, is he? He's going to, Upton Sinclair said it's very difficult to get a man to change his opinion, especially when his salary depends on him not doing so. John Mann, anti-Semitism finder general, is always going to find anti-Semitism. That's his job. Anyway, he's so fucking vile.
That's true.
A right-wing Labour monster. And that kind of nest of vipers in the West Midlands that brought us Tom Watson. People like that.
Well, that indeed, like some people say the police have to create the need for their existence, in a way.
Yeah.
And so they find crimes, or they foster an environment where crime can happen so that they can justify their paychecks or their funding. The government accepted all of Baron Mann's.
Yeah. They fucking would. In no way is that man independent. I assume he's gone.
Sorry, but including that NHS staff shouldn't wear political badges, which is just redefining the term of anti-Semitism, of course, because wearing a Free Palestine badge or a watermelon badge is not anti-Semitic.
No.
And calling it anti-Semitic is anti-Semitic, which is just straight up. Calling for the freedom of an oppressed people and saying that's an anti-Semitic thing is defining anti-Semitism as defining Jewishness as pro-oppression, which is an anti-Semitic thing to say.
It is.
Okay, yeah, this is farcical. This is ludicrous.
Yeah, it's just, I assume he's in Labour Friends of Israel and all that. He's always been a fanatical supporter of the genocide, apartheid state of Israel. Oh, he's in no way an independent advisor.
Some Jewish patients not wishing to present for treatment or putting off receiving important care because someone's got a watermelon badge. One of the plays I saw last night was written by a doctor, and the scenario was, she's a Palestinian doctor in 1948 Palestine. So she's remained within what is now called Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So she has to work in an Israeli hospital. You know, and she's treating an Israeli patient who is an older lady, and she keeps repeating, burn all Arabs, or Arabs should burn, you know, and she's right. Like, she's being actively racist at this doctor,
mm-hmm.
not just racist, violently, genocidally, racist out loud. And this doctor keeps telling her, I'm trying to help you. I'm helping you. I'm treating you. And you want me to burn? And she's like, yes, all Arabs should burn. Right into her face, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think what this is an attempt. I think that, you know, a lot of doctors have very bravely spoken out about the genocide, and it's an attempt. And people believe them because they can see that they're altruistic. You know, they've got no motives apart from, you know, easing human suffering. Why would they lie? They don't. So I think it's I think this Zionist bought and paid for government of ours, seeing that and knowing that people listen to the doctor, is trying to chill their speech. And of course, is your heart surgeon up in Scotland? UK Lawyers for Genocide has tried 11 times to get him struck off. And there's no case to answer whatsoever, but they, you know, the because they wage lawfare, because they want to tangle him up in court proceedings. They just keep
say in the future we get a decent government and they reverse this.
Yes.
Then it will be on record that they scrapped anti-Semitism training, which is such a, you know, a horrible thing to have on your record. Just those words, you know.
It's not anti-Semitism training, is it?
I know it's not, but that's what will be
pro-Israel.
Written down. Yeah.
It's pro-Israel propaganda. But
that's what will be written in the record, you know.
Yeah.
You're putting people in these positions.
Well, I would let's get a decent government elected first and cross that bridge when we come to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, notice I've got a new chair, by the way. It squeaks a lot less.
You haven't been squeaking yet.
No.
Let's hear it. Do a little lean for me.
What?
Oh, that's a normal amount of squeaking. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
The other one, it was rather, the other one collapsed, went backwards, and I was sort of trapped between my desk, and it was a rather terrifying feeling, really, because I couldn't figure out a way to free myself. And so I was trapped in this kind of hunched over. Luckily, Linda was in, so she came and eventually freed me, but it was just actually rather scary. Scary and absurd, you know.
That's what it takes for you to replace the creepy chair.
It's completely, you're trying to kill me. Yeah.
I have a very dark joke that I'm not going to say. Polanski's been getting more pushed back by the Zionist corporate media propaganda machine because he backs monitoring of British Israeli nationals who serve in the IDF.
That's completely right. And these are the things he should be doing and not apologizing in any way for it. But yeah, I don't understand. Is there any other army that you can go and serve in? It seems treason, really, for a start. And then, yeah, those, you know, I know, like the chief rabbi's son, for instance, you know, they are fighting in an army that is, you know, demonstrably committing all kinds of horrific war crimes, rape, torture, murder, ethnic cleansing. And I think it's absolutely right that these people are monitored. You know, for our safety, apart from anything else, the things they've seen, the things they've done, you know, that they are now let loose in our society, I think it's really disturbing.
And you've got to be inherently racist to go and do that as well.
You've got to believe in Israel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is a by its nature a racist project.
And that, is you know, there any Jewish. Other armies that you could do that? I guess you could go and join a private militia, which go and do all sorts of
think you can
nasty stuff around the world. You know,
I don't know anybody out there knows. I don't think you can. Most armies, you can't fight in somebody else's army. I don't know why there is an. Well, you kind of know why there is an exception for Israel, but it's. It's wrong. I mean, I applaud the Green Party for proposing this, and they should not in any way back down. The only way to deal with that criticism is to be on the front foot, and you know, I look forward to them doing that, really.
And of course, just. You know, labeling these people as simply as British Jews, you know, making them seem so much more innocent and making this an issue of anti-Semitism again, which it isn't. It's nothing to do with British Jews. It's to do with people, like you said, going and joining a psychopathic war.
Yeah. Terrifying.
You know, even just for the PTSD, we should be monitoring.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, just for that alone. People will be very damaged, I think.
Right. Do you want to change the subject here? I had an interesting.
Could do.
I had an interesting email. I got it a couple of months ago now. So sorry for the delay, Andy, but thanks for the email. The email is titled Alexi Supporting the Damned at Wembley Arena. On the 11th of April, 2026. Do you remember supporting the Damned then?
Just that hasn't happened yet. That's in the future.
No, it's a couple months ago. 11th of April, 2026. It's 2026 now.
Oh, well, I didn't support the Damned.
Well, you did, Alexi. Listen, Andy says, listened. Oh, what? You know what this is going to be?
I think I do, yeah.
I listened to the episode 121 of the podcast on my way to the Damned 50th anniversary gig at Wembley Arena. During the gig, a number of images and short films were projected onto a large screen covering the band's 50-year history, including their performance on The Young Ones. To my great amusement, one of the films showed Alexi in full vampire regalia flying behind the band. The Young Ones had quite a reputation for hosting interesting musical acts, The Damned, Motorhead, Madness, etc. Does Alexi have any memories regarding these artists and any unusual rock and roll behavior? P.S. I'm assuming Alexi didn't receive an appearance fee for The Damned at Wembley.
No, but somebody did tell me, I think Peter Richardson's assistant has been there, she told me that, yeah, she'd seen that. I don't, with the Damned, I remember them. They seem very sweet, really. I remember one of them, his wife worked in like bookings for British Airways, and he was just ringing her up, you know, say what he wants for his tea or whatever. They seem very normal. The ones that, I remember the ones that seemed quite frightening were Rip Rig and Panic. And of course, the lead singer of Rip Rig and Panic, I think it was normally was Nina Cherry, but in this, the episode of The Young Ones party, it is in fact TV chef Andy Oliver.
Oh.
If you look closely. But I remember they were all like, whoa, there's booze here, let's drink it. And we're all like, I'm a bit, no, they're props. You can't drink it, it's for continuity. And they didn't. So I remember Rip Rig and Panic seeming quite, you know, wild, like pop stars.
Right.
I don't remember. I don't think I was around when Motorhead were there. Because the reason, as has been told, the reason that we had bands was because The Young Ones was actually classified as a light entertainment program, which meant you got a bigger budget. But you had, you know, so it was essentially, it was a variety show.
Yes.
And, but you had to have music in it, so.
And you got a bit of stand-up from you, so yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
What about The Damned, though? What's that anecdote about the Damned. There is one, isn't there? You all went out for dinner afterwards or something? And
oh, I can't remember. Yeah, somebody's got a story. I can't remember.
That's Lisa's story, isn't it?
Yeah. I think I got Madness on the show because I knew them vaguely from round and about.
Did they actually perform live, or was it all mimed?
It was all mimed.
Yeah? Was it just like the album track you'd use, or would they record a version for the show?
I can't remember. They did some kind of random number, didn't they? Dr. Dexy's do. They did, I can't remember now.
Oh, Dexy did a weird one.
But that, yeah, I'm dressed as a vampire because I'm the driving instructor from the Transvaal. But they get the Transvaal and Transylvania mixed up. But in fact, I'm the man from Rumbelows. I'm Harry the Bastard.
You bastard.
And you owe me £500. Wow, what a complete bastard.
I found a list, but it doesn't tell us what songs they played. There were some...
Who else was on?
There were some obscure ones that, you know, I wouldn't have known of
yeah.
if it wasn't for the show, like Rip
Music
Panic.
My Braces. What about Rip Riggan Panic?
The first one was Nine Below Zero.
Yeah.
Were they really big at the time? Because that was your...
No, I don't think. No, I don't know what they were
that
doing
was
there.
The pilot. Then Radical Posture.
Well, that's me.
Oh, yes, that's Dr.
Picking
Martin's
up extra
boost.
Fees God. As the music turn as well as
the second episode.
Yeah.
Did you get an extra fee for that?
I don't know.
Oh, good work. Sure. Madness after that. Then you got Dexy's. Yeah, I remember there was sing. Was that in the bathroom or something?
Yeah.
Rip Riggan Panic to close out the series. Series 2, Motorhead. Now we're talking. Then Ken Bishop's Nice 12.
Well, that was just all our friends. It was Roland and Jules Holland and Simon Brint. It was just all our...
It was like a mixture of Sweet.
All our mates. Yeah, yeah.
And Dexy, a bit of Dexy's and, in there. And
I think Dexy's are in there, but there's Jules Holland. There's just Sweet and
Sweet and Jules Holland's band.
Jules Holland and Roland and Simon.
Ken Bishop's Nice 12. Is that a play on anything?
I can't remember. It was some... private joke, I think, that lot I had, but I don't know what it was.
Then he had the Damned. Then Amazulu. They're still known.
Madness. Maybe it was Amazulu. Was it Rip Riggan Panic or Amazulu that Andy Oliver was singing in now?
Well, I don't think it was Rip Riggan Panic.
I think it must have been Amazulu then.
Wait, do you mean Andrea...
Andy Oliver, the mother of Makita Oliver, who's now a TV chef, she was either lead singer in that recording of either Rip Riggan Panic or Amazulu.
I think Andrea Oliver, not Andy, Andrea.
I think she goes by, all right.
Well, maybe she goes by Andy. Andy Oliver. You're right. That was Rip Riggan Panic.
Was Rip Riggan Panic.
Yeah, Panic over. Yep. And then, so Amazulu.
I'm a Glaswegian myself.
Oh, yes. Is that the Rick Hamster who says
that? SPG, yeah. Special Patrol Group.
Amazulu were a British ska pop band formed in 1982. They performed their song Moonlight Romance in the episode. And then Madness Return. And the last one was John Otway.
Oh, was it? All right. Well, John Otway. I think on my last tour, more or less, the last tour of the UK, he was my support, John Otway. John Otway is always fantastic value. Had one big hit, Baby, I'm Really Free, and would climb the speaker stack and then fall off it. I urge everybody. He's still going, I think.
He's still touring.
Yeah, I urge everybody to look up John Otway.
Right,
he was the perfect support act for me on tour.
Is he funny?
Kind of.
So you'd have like a proper musician support you, rather than
well, I never wanted another comic, really.
Why is that?
Well, I just thought it, you know, I just wanted all the laughs for myself, really.
Okay.
I did, and later when I went back on the road, I was less precious about that, and I had a variety of people.
I can see that. I think Bassem Youssef got jealous that I got bigger laughs than him.
Yeah, yeah. That never obviously happened with me, but, you know, yeah.
When I supported him on tour.
Yeah.
John Otway. When you did the last episode of The Young Ones, did you know that was going to be the last episode?
Yeah, because they killed. I know they didn't. That's not necessarily a barrier, but they were obsessed with only Rick and Lisa and Ben. We're obsessed with only ever doing 12. So they, you know, they killed off.
Right.
They killed everybody off. So they couldn't come back, although obviously they could have come back. No, I always thought that was a mistake, really. I think we should have done like 3 series and a couple of Christmas specials. I think we left it. You know, we finished it before it had really reached its potential, I think. But I didn't have a say.
You could have done one more, I think. When are we gonna have Roland Riveron on?
Oh, I don't know. Whenever you
to tell you some want. Stories about these times.
Yeah. Well, whenever you want.
Whenever I want. All right, viewers, would you like that? Viewers, listeners. Oh, let me quickly just plug the Patreon. GB Creeby. Dearest listeners of the Alexis Hill podcast, we have an entire sovereign nation being built over on our Patreon. patreon.com/AlexisHillPodcast. We have the supreme leader Alexis Hill. We have his trusty Arabian sidekick, myself, Talal Kalkuti, and we have now just anointed Mark as the Secretary of Culture and shit. But these are all inside jokes that you'd only get if you were a patron. Go to patreon.com/AlexisHillPodcast. Support the show for a few quid a month. You'll get to see Alexi Reacts every week, which is a show when Alexi watches old shit he's done and reacts to it. And there's loads of other exclusive shit on there. And there's chat rooms, lovely community. Like I said, it's a whole sovereign nation, a utopia where we have a dictator that everyone wants there. Come and join us. It's a Marxist utopia. patreon.com/AlexisHillPodcast. Thank you very much. Speaking of, there's a chat room there. Point of contention. Just a couple bits before we leave.
All right, yeah. Yeah, nearly had enough, but go on.
People were talking about the boys. We got one positive and one negative. The Lee or Lay or Lelg says, this week's podcast mentioned the boys. I recently found out that the actor who plays Frenchie, Tomer Kopon, is an Israeli actor who served in the IDF. This is one of the main characters. Haven't been able to bring myself to start season 5 because of this. I was in a similar situation, but I just wanted to finish it off. I only found out before series 5 that he was. It started going around social media that he was an ex-IDF dude. And I've always kind of hated that character. I found him annoying. But yeah, he's one of the leads in that. And I know there are other cast members in there who are pro-Palestine. and, you know, when I was in Morocco, I had to work with a couple of Israeli actors, and it was it soured my soup as well as being.
Yeah, it's being difficult. I know. Well, when I did Casualty, and I was playing the homophobic Russian dad of a.
Oh yeah,
one of the paramedics. He was Israeli, but we kind of had we had a Zoom about my Russian accent and stuff, and he very clearly signaled that he'd actually served 4 years in the IDF as a dog handler on the border with Gaza, but he was extremely anti-IDF, anti-Zionist.
Ah,
so that was fine.
Interesting. I had a conversation. These were two girls who were very young, pre-IDF, pre-military service. And I brought myself to have a conversation with one of them. And, you know, I just opened up with, do you sympathize with the Palestinian people? I just had to ask her that. And if she had said no, I would have just straight up said, well, we can't be friends then. And I would have ended the conversation. But obviously she was, maybe she was just being tactful, but she said, of course I do. Of course I do. And I hate our government. And a lot of our people hate the government and I sympathize with them. And then there was a little bit of, but, you know, we are scared of this or that.
This is you, elderly Arab, hitting on another young girl.
Not hitting on, fuck off. Then her mate came over. Are you okay? No. I was forced to be in a room with her for a bit. So I had to just clear the air because I was just biting my tongue the whole time. And I'm glad I did because it made me loosen up a little bit.
You. Yeah.
But so, yeah, the boys has that element to it, and I can only imagine this is like one of the leads who everyone else just, you have to be in scenes with them all the time. Who knows what this guy personally feels? Yeah, he used to serve in the IDF, but like you said, some people change their feelings about that, you know. But contrarily, Steve commented on the boys, I was surprised that you didn't mention it's essentially an allegory on Trump's Trump's America. Some of Homelander's speeches were almost verbatim Trump, and the whole Messiah complex in the final series really hammered it home. I think Alexei may watch it if he knew this.
Okay.
I don't know if that's enough to overpower the, you don't like that kind of shock factor for shock factor's sake.
No.
And taking pleasure in all the violence and everything.
Yeah.
And lots of agreement with you about the beekeeper being pretty bad. Pretty bad. Philip's son and nephew. Did we mention that last?
I said that. Yeah, I mentioned it in terms of shoplifting when I was a child.
Well, Amro remembers that place in the 80s. Peak Thatcherism.
Very lax security. If somebody, I'm not saying I did, but if somebody was trying to shoplift, but gotta be careful these days.
Peter Firth's not related to Colin Firth from the Corrections Department. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, I think that might do it for this week, Alexi, unless there's something else you want to add.
No, I think that's it, really. It's a free roving podcast.
Yep.
Free
the Filton 18, free Palestine, as well as that.
Absolutely. Go and see Operation Recomply.
Mm-hmm.
This struggle carries on for another week.
Take pleasure in the struggle, as Maxine Peake said on this very show. Don't give up.
See you all hopefully next week. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexei Sale podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.